Hi, my name is Matt. I'm the founder of Regeneration Projects, a small business that sees two great bays and a river as our most important business partners. We started at a kitchen table during Melbourne's epic COVID-19 lockdown, and now we're a B Corp and actor in the UN decade on ecosystem restoration. As we begin this episode, we'd like to acknowledge the two great bays, Port Phillip and Western Port, which are known to First Peoples as Nam and Wurrumbirrin, or Murrumbik. Without the bays and the Birrarung Yarra River, we wouldn't be in business today. So we show deep respect to First Nations elders, past and present, who for over 60,000 years have cared for the bays, Birrarung, and their catchment areas. Their ecological knowledge inspires us to practice business in partnership with nature. Now, choosing a career that tackles environmental issues like climate change, biodiversity loss, or pollution can be incredibly rewarding, but also super tough. When we listen to the stories of passionate and pioneering professionals, it stokes our inner fire and belief so that we can keep doing the work that we know needs to be done to benefit future generations. That's what the Two Bays podcast is all about. Stories of hope, grit, and determination, inspiring the planet's next generation of ecological leaders and entrepreneurs. This series is made in partnership with the Mornington Peninsula Shire Council and celebrates the stories of business and community champions at the forefront of local climate action. Let's tune in. Womanjika, welcome and come with purpose to the Two Bays podcast. My name is Matt Sykes, and today we'll be continuing this journey around the Mornington Peninsula, spotlighting climate champions that are using business or using their positions in leadership to be able to support the betterment of not only our climate, but also our local economy. Before we jump in and meet our guest for today, I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge country, to acknowledge those two beautiful bays that this podcast is named after, Wurrumbirrin, Murrumbik, or you might know it more commonly as Western Port, and then its twin, Nerm, or Port Phillip Bay. These two bays and their incredible ecosystems that they're able to create provide a setting not just for life on the peninsula, but also for work, for visitors and locals alike. It's really important that we acknowledge those Bunurong and Boomwurrung connections that continue through elders past and present, and in particular their ecological knowledge and the way of moving safely, carefully, respectfully through country, which is something that we'll be exploring a little bit more in this episode as we speak with a colleague and a dear friend as well that works in the ecotourism and adventure tourism space. Nick Cooper is the founder of Wild Adventures Melbourne, and Nick and I have spent many time walking around the peninsula, around Arthur's Seat, or some might know it as Wonga, and tracing his story, to be honest, has been incredibly inspiring. To be able to see someone that started a business and grown that business across the last few years and now, really getting well-deserved recognition. Nick, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast, and I'm going to pass straight to you with a question here. With life on the peninsula, how do you see that connection or that awareness to what's going on in terms of climate change being as close as it is? What's your take on that?
Hi, Matt. Always love having a chat with you. and thanks for having me. Yeah, I mean, the Mornington Peninsula's, strength is also its weakness and vulnerability to climate change. So, part of the reason for starting Wild Adventures Melbourne is because you have this incredible nature and adventure on Melbourne's doorstep, less than an hour away. But at the same time, because of that, you get a massive volume of visitors. You get a lot of pressure on the ecosystems here too. So it's a really interesting place because it's this beautiful adventure, natural wonderland. But then you know, for example, you talked about Port Phillip Bay, Nerm there as well. We share that bay with a massive city. You know, I don't know, is Melbourne the biggest city in Australia now, I think? So, you know, it's under so much pressure, that ecosystem, and it's incredibly vulnerable as well, both in the water, in Nerm, in Port Phillip Bay, but also on land here with the sheer volume of people that are coming down here, with the pressures of waste, of over-tourism, of, damage, I guess, to nature and ecosystem, as well as all the emissions that are kind of being caused from all of that too. So it's a really interesting place, because, you know, as an operator down here, it's almost feels compulsory to act because we're in a situation that is extremely sort of I guess on the front line of seeing how visible climate change can affect a destination as well.
Nick, the way that you frame that in terms of the risks and vulnerabilities of the peninsula also being interlinked with its strengths really resonates. You know, that closeness, that dependency on nature and a healthy and safe environment that includes a climate is something that feels really important, because, you know, there are businesses like yours that, you know, it's right, like nature's right there, but then all of the other degrees of separation, whether it's in agriculture or whether it's construction, whether it's in education, there's these quite narrow or intensified degrees of connection. When you were thinking about locating yourselves, your family, but also your business, what was it that struck you about the peninsula? And can you tell us a little bit more about how WAM started?
Yeah, so I grew up in the southeast of England, and I grew up in a childhood of adventure in the countryside, and spent my all day every day when I wasn't at school and things, just going out into the countryside no matter what the weather, and just kind of making your own fun and adventure and things. And then in 1995, when I was 11, I think my dad went bankrupt, and they decided they needed a new revenue stream, so they turned our family home into a guest house. And from that moment on, from 1995, we just had people from all over the world coming in and out the house, and I was kind of sort of thrown into tourism, and I absolutely loved it. My brother, who's a scientist now, didn't enjoy it, but I loved meeting people and, just kind of providing that hospitality and things as well. And I guess that was from that moment on, I've kind of been in tourism, and that was, without even realizing, I always thought I didn't know what I wanted to do for a career, but it turns out that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to see the world and provide these experiences and, deliver great times to people as well. But working so many years in tourism, I saw the good, the bad, and the ugly of the industry, and saw the damaging effects that the industry can have. And sometimes I was working or traveling in a way that probably wasn't the most conscious way, probably wasn't the most realizing that, you know, I could be doing that in a better way. But, you know, all of those years were learnings, I guess. And eventually meeting my wife, who's Australian, and moving here to the Mornington Peninsula, I thought, wow, finally I've got this lifelong dream of starting my own company, but I don't want to be part of the problem. I want to be part of the solution. And I really wanted to build a business that proactively found solutions to the damages that tourists can give, and tried to operate in a way that was completely differently, and kind of ripping up that model of going, okay, let's look at the bottom line from the start. Let's kind of go with this growth at all costs. Kind of didn't look at that. I've kind of go, let's look at positive impact at all costs, and hopefully from there a business blossoms that's viable and is complementary to the ecosystem down here on the Mornington Peninsula. So the Mornington Peninsula was the perfect location to start an eco adventure company. But from all the lessons I learned in tourism, it was something that I wanted to deliver in a different way to what I had seen. And I feel like, yeah, everywhere I've been and worked and lived and seen has given me lessons of how I can operate differently and be a force for good. And hopefully that can be good for business as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's amazing how those transition points or those threshold points in our life where, necessity is the mother of invention, and each of us have started businesses, during this COVID time, and both very dependent on nature, and breaking away to work in these ways. Although there is a whole lineage of, let's say, ecological leadership and entrepreneurship, or those that just want to have a bit closer connection with nature and find ways of actively giving back, it can be a tough gig. So in terms of setting off on that journey, we'll dive into some of the climate-specific connections shortly, because we know that this stuff just doesn't sit in a silo. But when you were thinking, all right, well, let's look for an alternative, what were some of the steps that you took and the tools that you started to use that, yeah, I guess allowed you to set that intention or that aspiration, but to transform it into action and the way that you run your business day to day now?
Yeah, I think firstly it was almost looking into the future and going, if I operated this tour company like many tour companies around the world does, what would be the impacts of that? So kind of almost looking at it at a sort of an aerial view of the business and going, what does this look like and what damaging impacts can I potentially be causing? So obviously the emissions the business causes, the waste a business can cause, the over tourism a tour operator can affect communities, disrespect of communities and neglect of culture and all of these different things. So I kind of looked at almost like a worst case scenario of what a business can be, and then going, right, let's try and find solutions to each of them. Let's see how I can operate at zero waste. Let's see how I can be really proactive supporting the community. Let's see how I can tackle emissions. And, some of those tasks aren't an immediate solution, but they're definitely on the map for a future solution as well. And taking action on all areas of the business and looking at things holistically. So it's not just for me about kind of saying, a song and dance of this is what we're doing from that's visible to the customer. It's actually what's happening behind the scenes and going, if I open the doors to the business and let someone just come in and look at absolutely everything, then someone would go, he's thought about this across all parts of the business, and not necessarily found solutions to absolutely everything, but he's thought about it. And I love that sort of idea of transparency. You, Matt, at Regen Projects, you're a B Corp and WAM's a B Corp as well. And I guess that's a bit about it, is that transparency and accountability of going, I'm happy to show you absolutely every aspect of this business because I've got nothing to hide, because I'm proud of showing you that, I've been conscious in every decision I make and every decision I continue to make.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And just that willingness to put your neck out there, it's almost in the way that you share it, and maybe I feel similarly, it's almost a worse thing not to be open and transparent than it is to just put it out there, so that you can get a real test on where you're at. And to be honest, that probably goes as a counter to what many people are taught in business, to hide their you know, hide their vulnerabilities, hide their insecurities, hide the things in the back closet that, you know, where people might not be super proud about. But this model and the B Corp certification that you're mentoring, that's a B Corp is a model that was developed in the US. It's a certification that I guess looks at an independent perspective of an organization's social and environmental impact. And the B stands for benefit. So it's about creating net benefits for a whole range of stakeholders rather than just shareholders. As you say, Nick, for a new generation of entrepreneurs, these practices are just becoming the norm, and probably, you know, in time they'll get superseded by other and better things, or they'll just become mainstream. And, the people that we were meeting just in other podcast recordings, some of these young ones coming through in local primary schools, they'll be like, what? You ran a business without considering nature as a stakeholder or connecting with your community or thinking about, you know, the strategy that you're putting in place for your workers' well-being and so on, and you didn't allow people from outside the business to look at that? Well, that's just crazy. We're not there yet. You know, we are in a transition period. Nick, I want to touch on solutions here. Let's dive a little bit into this climate space, noting that it is interconnected with so many things. How do you understand climate action in the context of your business, and what are some of the examples of initiatives that you've put in place, large and small, or large or small, to be able to, yeah, just get started and start to chip away at it?
Yeah, climate action is linked to every part of the business, sometimes not just the obvious of, you know, reducing emissions from your vehicle, for example, or, you know, planting trees or things like that as well. I feel like, looking at your business holistically and looking at every area of it is a way of actually taking climate action if you make conscious decisions over all of that area. You know, so for example, your business operations and, you know, who you bank with. You know, you could be banking with a bank that contributes to the fossil fuel industry. So it's kind of going, well, that's actually going to have a knock-on effect of that's not, I guess, directly reducing your emissions, but it's indirectly reducing global emissions in some ways, you know. And so I guess I look at it from all angles from there. So there's certain ways that we're taking climate action that sometimes there's not the statistical evidence to show exactly what that means, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. So for example, we plant trees here on the Mornington Peninsula, and revegetation projects with Mornington Peninsula Koala Conservation, which is quite a direct way of, you know, going, okay, well, this tree is capturing this amount of CO2 over this amount of time, and therefore, you know, you can make that direct link. But we're also supporting a marine conservation project in Port Phillip Bay, which are restoring and regenerating shellfish reefs from there. And there's evidence to suggest that those reefs are capturing carbon, but there's not exact numbers on that. But that's part of us of going, well, that's actually taking climate action, and that's actually supporting a project that is capturing carbon. We don't know how much that is. I'm not going to be able to put that number in a report, but it's still a great thing that we're doing as well. Likewise, was watching the documentary 2040, which you've probably seen as well, you know, about sort of if we use solutions now and, you know, what things would look like in 2040 as well. And one of the things in that was talking about how, you know, supporting women through education is a solution to climate change, you know, and research suggests that that's actually the case of doing that, you know. And that, I guess, that kind of sparked a conversation with WAM to support the STARS Foundation, who are a charity here in Australia that supports young First Nations women through education and empowerment and finding work after education, all that sort of stuff. And again, I guess there's not, you know, direct statistical evidence of how that is tackling climate change or what the actual results are from it. But I love kind of looking at that too, you know. And then it goes to the real intricacies within a business of going, well, what's our supply chain going to be? What are the products we're going to use? What are the local businesses we're going to support, you know, and supporting local businesses with a conscious supply chain is then reducing the miles and the emissions and those products coming to you as well. And again, it's not sort of a direct statistic of going, oh, we've reduced our on the ground emissions by this respect, but it's tackling the overarching thing of emissions too. So yeah, I think sometimes in life, you know, you want evidence and you want, you know, real sort of stern figures and strong sort of meaty results of what you can put in your impact reports and stuff as well. But I like going beyond that. And I like kind of saying, well, you know, this is for the greater good. And if there's not an exact figure to that at this stage, then that's okay, because I know that this project we're supporting, this local business we're supporting, this, you know, no compromise approach that we've got towards doing the right thing is having a knock on effect to taking climate action, I guess.
Yeah, thanks so much, Nick. And folks, I think as you listen to Nick walk us through that and his ways of drawing upon the reasons and this quite holistic approach gives a very practical insight into the way that as a business owner and manager, he's just factoring these things very much into day-to-day decision-making. One of the things that you mentioned, that First Nations connection, I'd love to just lean into that for a moment. Business for Country is a program that we've both been part of, working collaboratively with some of the local Boomerang leaders and trying to create these spaces where First Nations cultural knowledge and understanding of place can intersect with, you know, different leaders that are looking to have, let's say, a purpose beyond profit. And that's looked like everything from, you know, smoking ceremonies and welcome to countries up at Wonga Arthur's Seat and short walks, you know, visiting, you know, local farms like the Uncommon Collective Farm. And it maybe one of the parallels that I'm seeing in some of the themes we see in those conversations with Willie Pepper and David Tornier, but here is that idea of caring for country, caring for country cares for us. It's kind of just common sense, and yet sometimes it needs to be justified. And look, there's benefits to tracking these things, absolutely. But just from your own personal perspective, how's that First Nations understanding of country influenced or shaped the way you go about business on the peninsula?
It's the inspiration in a lot of ways of how WAM operates, because if you have that philosophy of caring for country and country will care for you, then you don't make any reckless decisions. You don't make any decisions that are damaging. You know, everything you're doing is trying to support that, you know, as you mentioned before, stakeholder of nature, I guess, of going, well, this is what we've got to do as well. You know, caring for country and country will care for you is, you know, linked to that is, you know, caring for community and community will care for you as well. So, you know, that's a lot of what we do of, you know, prioritizing, trying to support local businesses and conscious businesses and, you know, seeing if there's First Nations owned businesses that we can, you know, support or have some products from them too as well. So, you know, I think it just helps with mindset of that sort of, you know, First Nations caring for country philosophy, I guess, is that's just kind of my mindset that I'm just not going to make any decision that's going to be a problem. And sometimes that's a challenge. Sometimes there might be things like budget comes into play and resources come into play and all of that sort of stuff. But I'm a huge believer that there is a solution to almost everything. And it's just about going out and finding it. And actually, if you have that, trail of thought in your head that there's a solution to everything, then it actually becomes addictive to try and find what that solution is. So is there a cost-effective, conscious, local solution to this business decision I'm about to make as well? And that comes right back to supporting First Nations culture, communities, and understanding that sort of that way of thinking and acting.
Yeah, I'm quite curious to dive into perhaps an example of one of these challenges that you've had to face and where you've had to balance, all right, there's a climate or there's an environmental benefit here and there's also a business benefit. And sometimes we get presented with those things as being mutually exclusive and then, you know, but there is like a threshold where actually you can get into really strong climate benefits and strong commercial sense as well. Is there an obstacle that you've had to face recently where you've just got a puzzle and you're thinking, right, how am I going to find that elusive solution or that solution that you know exists? What was the challenge and how did you think through it to overcome it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the sunscreen we provide for free to all of our guests is a really good example. That's not so recent, you know, that we've been working with Sunbutter for 3 years. So Sunbutter, as you know, Matt, they're a Mornington Peninsula-based business who provide a reef-safe, palm oil-free sunscreen in a tin. And we provide that for free to all of our WAM guests so that when we're taking them in the ocean snorkeling or on stand-up paddleboarding or wild swimming, that they're wearing a sunscreen that's not toxic to them and not toxic to the ocean as well. I could have gone to a supermarket and got a cheap sunscreen to provide for free. Like, to be completely honest, a lot of the life-saving schools and a lot of the school groups and a lot of the maybe surf schools in Australia potentially give that sunscreen because, you know, it's going to be cheaper than a small local business that's kind of doing all these things for the environment as well. But you actually find that once you start speaking to these small businesses and you are, you know, almost transparent and vulnerable in terms of what your limitations are, then they want to support you as well. And so I found that with Sunbutter, for example, they might give us some stock that's damaged or, well, I don't mind if it's got a dent in it in that tin, or they're going to be really great of working with us and going, well, you know, let's try and work to your budgets here or provide you wholesale pricing or things like that. So I think sometimes when you have that mindset that there is a solution to everything, it's worth exploring all options. So sometimes the retail price that might be prohibiting you proceeding with that product, there might be a way around that. And it's always worth engaging in those conversations. And these conscious businesses are wanting to support other conscious businesses as well. So I guess, you know, Sunbutter is just a really good example of that. But I could talk about, you know, dozens of other products that we use where that exact same process has come in, have gone, well, this is more expensive, but we want to do this, you know. And then there's some challenges that I still haven't solved. So, you know, our vehicle, the WAM vehicle, is a petrol vehicle, and there's not too much I can do about that at the moment, you know, finding a 9-12 seater EV or is, you know, one, they're not really readily available in Australia. Two, if they are, they're ridiculously expensive and way beyond that budget as well. So there are some things where I, you know, reluctantly can't like completely attack that, but what can I do to limit the impacts of that decision? And so that's what I try and do with our vehicle, of going, well, how can we really limit the impact of those emissions? And that's everything from, you know, reducing the amount we're traveling, encouraging people to get public transport down here to the Mornington Peninsula and then we'll pick them up, or encouraging overnight stays so people aren't doing a day trip, or, you know, how we're, you know, planting a tree for every single guest that joins a trip with us locally here on the peninsula. So we're insetting our emissions rather than offsetting to some far-flung overseas project that we can't actually guarantee or be visible of what's actually happening with that too. So yeah, it's interesting because there are some things that are ongoing challenges. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't write a long-term goal of how you want to overcome them, even if that's not achievable, even if you can't see how that can be achievable right now. You know, I don't know how I'm ever going to have $100,000 to $200,000 to get myself an EV or whatever it is. But one day that solution might present itself. So you might as well have that as a long-term goal. And when it comes, it comes.
Yeah. Really powerful, Nick, the way that you talk through that and just acknowledge some of those ongoing challenges and the ways that you adapt it. Our good friend Tash and her philosophy of progress over perfection that she's often talking about comes to mind. Certainly a shout out to Tom and Sasha from Sambutta. Tom is on one of the episodes in this series also, so you'll hear more about that there. If this has been your first episode, we'd definitely recommend jumping across to that one. Nick, yeah, it's really interesting diving into the detail, and I think it's quite incredible the way that you're going about it, and incredible because it is just so natural to you. And I think we're not alone in that sense. One of the things that, you know, we've come up time and time again in this series is often people moving to the peninsula or having a connection to the peninsula because of the space that it creates for ourselves, but also for our partners and for our families, for those that are setting off on that journey in life. And I guess just from your own perspective, you know, when you do look back and you think about the legacy that you might leave or might be creating for your family, how does that factor into your decision making? Because I know for many people, myself included, you know, you have questions around, you know, bring children into the world when we do know some of the challenges that they could face. Climate change, biodiversity loss, pollution, these types of things are very, very real. But at the same time, if we're able to kind of give them tools and to chip in and kind of lay some foundations building on our past elders and pioneers, then, you know, it's great to be able to chip into that. But, yeah, I'm just curious to how you feel in that intergenerational sense and the actions that you're taking, you know, now are no doubt being passed on to others that will benefit in the future too.
Yeah, and I'm extremely conscious of that. The actions we're taking now is with a lens to the future. You know, so I guess talking about purpose, you know, WAM launched in 2020, and at the time, you know, I guess my purpose was, you know, creating a tourism business that operated differently and, you know, sort of tackled those negative elements. In 2022, I had a daughter and, you know, she's almost two now, and that has almost elevated that determination. I think also that has actually really kicked my ass, pardon the language, to look even more long term than I have before. And, you know, look at her where, you know, maybe she looks back in however many years and goes, WAM or Dad tried to make this place a better place for everyone as well. An example of that is here on the Mornington Peninsula, as a eco nature-based tourism company, it's not really possible for me to take people to see koalas. And that's because there's not many koalas here on the Mornington Peninsula. So it's actually quite a difficult thing to do. So you have conservation projects like MP Koalas, who WAM's a big supporter of, who are trying to rebuild these corridors of habitat. They're working with private landowners, which is 70% of koala habitat is on private land, to replant these corridors and all of that. And I hope maybe in 30 years time or something like that, maybe my daughter, if she wants to, might be running a tour with WAM, and she'll be able to take people to see koalas. And I think that's just a really lovely sort of dream of the future and things as well. It's the same in Port Phillip Bay in too, of going, well, you know, there's jet skis at the moment, and there's a lot of impacts on being able to see dolphins, particularly in the summer months. And when you do see dolphins, it's a really powerful, special moment. But, you know, if we're supporting this reef restoration and developing, you know, regenerating ecosystems, and that's supporting the dolphins, providing them more food and things as well. And, you know, the container deposit scheme that's just come here into Victoria in November as well. You know, I one of the codes that's on there that you can donate to is the Dolphin Research Institute. So now we're heading into a park here or to the ocean or to the beach, and we carry portable bins on all of our tours. So for me, it's not just about operating the tours at zero waste. It's about cleaning each place up and leaving it cleaner than we found it. And again, that's kind of, I guess, looking long term as well. But now I'm taking some of those cans and bottles and things, I'm taking it to the container deposit scheme, and I'm donating to the Dolphin Research Institute from there. So, you know, almost generating funds out of waste again. And again, that's kind of looking longer term to support the dolphins, and they're part of the Two Bays Whale Project as well. So supporting these projects. So long term is massive for me now. That's something that I'm really really focused on, of looking at that and going, what can I do long term? And that's why we've got our 2030 goals. But, you know, I guess the closer 2030 gets, the more we'll extend them out and look at deeper ways we can support as well. So, yeah, I think my daughter's given me a whole new perspective and determination on, I had it before, of operating consciously, but maybe that forward thinking has been enhanced even more since seeing her, and hopefully having this future on this Mornington Peninsula, because it's this amazing, beautiful place full of variety of nature-based experiences, as well as culinary and wellness experiences as well. But it's not going to be the same place if we continue on the trajectory that we're on as humans, I guess, living here too. So as an operator, I have a captive audience of people that can understand what our purpose is, as well as giving them an awesome day. I'm also giving them information about how they can give back, how they can, you know, operate in their everyday lives, how they can travel more consciously and things as well. So I think that's really, really, really important, that as an operator we can do that, and as a small operator, hopefully I can lead by example and inspire change. Although our voice is very small, being a tiny business, you know, potentially someone might listen to this podcast, Matt, or potentially someone might see what WAM's doing, and that might inspire changes amongst what they do as well. And I'm a hugely passionate about attempting to transform the tourism industry to be a more force for good, I guess. And there's so much potential there, but there's so much work to be done.
There is, but you are well on the way, Nick, well and truly on the way. And, you know, this, the way that you think about all of these stakeholders, from your daughter to sunscreen companies to, container deposit schemes. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I've got a bucket of bottles that I've collected from litter cleanups as well. So I'm glad that that wasn't a silly idea that I had alone. But yeah, there are so many different stakeholders involved. There's one person that I do want to bring into the conversation, or a perspective, let's say. And I maybe to ask this one, we'll put ourselves at the top of Arthur's Seat, or Wonga as we might know it. And I know there's a particular look out there that you're very fond of, and it's got a quite spiritual feeling to be in that place. But Nick, if you were to take yourself back, you know, to when you were that young kid growing up in England, and you were looking ahead at this pathway that you're creating for yourself, is there any bit of advice, a little pearl of wisdom you might just say, hey mate, just giving you a heads up, keep this in mind? Is there something you might share?
You know what, I think all of those years of traveling gives you traveling does a lot of things to sort of open your mind and gives you a lot of understandings and respect for cultures and all of that sort of things. But I think I would have told myself to really be a lot more active and respectful in supporting communities and cultures and countries that I went to. And I think sometimes, you know, some of the things I did over the years in traveling, I thought were adventurous. And, you know, you kind of think one dimensionally of, well, oh, I'm booking an experience that's supporting a business and all of that. But then what are the impacts of that and things too? So, you know, I guess I'm ashamed to say, but I'll give you an example. In 2004, we were in Thailand and rode an elephant, for example. And like, you know, that almost sounds ridiculous now, but back then, 20 years ago, it wasn't really frowned upon. But you know, if I had actually thought about that, if I had actually gone, well, we're in Thailand, this is a great experience, but if I'd actually thought, what are the impacts of that? I think very much as a younger person, I was very much impulsive and very sort of black and white and, you know, just kind of did things on a whim. But I think that would be my advice, of having deeper thought into each of your actions to ensure that it is the right decision. I don't know if I answered that too well, but that's the truth.
Yeah, I think the truth and that little bit of rawness there is what cuts through sometimes. So thanks so much for going there and being open to sharing that, because, to be honest, it's one of those things with climate action. Sometimes we hear these really polished narratives that organizations will paint, and we're doing this and we're going to, you know, be this and it's going to be fantastic. But we don't always look at some of those more challenging aspects, or the raw aspects, or the things that led to being able to have those skills. And I think that's the key with this series. It's not about saying that, hey, everyone's perfect, or, you know, there's this absolute pathway you can do. It's about saying, you know what, wherever you are on the peninsula right now listening to it, or even if you're off the peninsula, then there's a place to start. There's a question to ask. There's a conversation to have. There's a decision to make and to factor in. And if you take that progress over perfection attitude, and that awareness of caring for country and that reciprocity, then you kind of can't go wrong. And I think that fear of failure is often what perhaps becomes an obstacle for us setting out in the first place. Nick Cooper, it's been an absolute pleasure to spend some time with you, mate, and always fantastic to learn more and different perspectives of Wild Adventures Melbourne as a pioneering ecotourism, adventure tourism, I'm going to even say regenerative tourism, you know, pioneer, and the example that that sets for others in that industry, visitors and wider spheres. So on that note, folks, we're going to wrap up this particular episode of the Two Bays podcast. My name's Matt Sykes, and until next time, thanks for tuning in. Cheers. How amazing are those Mornington Peninsula climate champions? Must be something in the water. Against the odds, they're transforming climate anxiety into climate action. Keep your eyes out for new episodes coming soon. So you're feeling inspired and ready to act. What can you do next? Firstly, subscribe to the Two Bays podcast on your favorite channel. Then visit the Regeneration Project's website for more info about our ecological leadership and strategic consultancy work. Lastly, don't forget to follow Regeneration Projects on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, as well as subscribe to our seasonal newsletter. My name is Matt, and on behalf of Regeneration Projects and the Two Bays, thank you for tuning in, and see you on the next episode of Two Bays, a Business and a Kitchen Table podcast.